Welcome, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of Vegan Activist Radio. My name is Cheryl Sobey, and I'm the host and producer of Vegan Activist Radio. Thank you, everyone, so much for your support of my show. It's been such a pleasure to be able to interview amazing activists who are changing the world. And recently, I've been interviewing some local activists. And yeah, it's been really, really great. Hopefully, you've had a chance to listen to the past two episodes I did with local activists Lara Milkey and Chad Nuttall. But today, I've got a really great show planned. I'm very happy to welcome local activist Michelle Tree to Vegan Activist Radio. Welcome, Michelle. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks, Cheryl. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's awesome. All right. Well, to start the interview, I guess, just do you mind telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Michelle, and I'm 46 years old. I'm married, and I have two rescue dogs. They're adopted dogs because I believe in always adopting and never buying dogs. I'm pretty passionate about eating for health and, animal activism and and on the side, I do a bit of photography and strength training in my free time.
Awesome. Yeah, you're a pretty busy lady, but doing lots of good stuff. Yeah. So I guess another question I normally ask all my guests, because it's about veganism and activism. So when did you first go vegan and what inspired you to go vegan?
So, the more vegans I meet, I meet a lot of people who went vegan kind of overnight. They usually have one pivotal moment that defines their veganism. But for me, it's been much more of a process and much more of a journey than that. Mm-hmm. So about 12 years ago, I was working for Cancer Care Manitoba Foundation, and I was fundraising for them. And one of the things that I was confused about was, we kept looking at the stats and how many people were going to have cancer and get cancer over the years. And I was confused as to why we were just looking for a cure and not trying to stop people from actually getting it in the first place. So I started looking into why people were getting cancer. I guess with meeting so many people, there was young people and older people, it seemed like everyone was getting it. And it was something that started to really concern me. And one of the first things I found when I started looking into it was that processed meats have a direct link to colorectal cancer and stomach cancer. And, it seemed really definitive. So I immediately went home, told my boyfriend at the time that, we're not going to eat processed meats anymore. We can't eat processed meats, no more hot dogs. And mm-hmm. he had no problem with that. He said, sounded legitimate, and he thought that was no problem. So we stopped eating processed meats, because of health. Mm-hmm. But then, the more I started looking into it and, watching some movies and looking for information, I did start to see what was happening with animals and factory farming. And so the next thing we decided to give up with was beef. We gave up pork when we gave up processed foods. We decided just, all pork products. Mm-hmm. And then I really started realizing, okay, well, I'm not eating pigs anymore. And then we started looking at cows. And I saw a bit of video where I saw a cow being hoisted up by its back hind leg alive and its throat being slit. And that image really stuck with me. And then I looked at also the effect of red meat on heart disease. And, I lost my father to heart disease. So I thought, well, that makes a lot of sense too. Mm-hmm. And we then gave up red meat. And so for a while, we just ate chicken and fish and that seemed healthy enough. And it was really just without any prompting, I was out one day and we were eating chicken. And I just looked down and looked at what I was eating and saw the skin and the veins and the bones. Mm. And I was immediately disgusted. It was interesting because my husband was at the table with me and he had the same feeling at the same time. And we just actually put our food down. We were out at a restaurant and we just stopped eating and we put the food down and we left the restaurant. And wow. We just decided that was it. And we stopped eating chicken. So then for a while we ate fish and we still had some dairy and some eggs in our diet. Not that we were buying dairy, but we were eating it socially. Mm-hmm. We at the time felt like it was the easiest thing. We didn't know anyone who was vegan or vegetarian. And amongst our friends, it just seemed a lot easier for them to accept what we were doing if we included cheese in our diet. And so we did that for a little while. Then we saw a movie called The Cove. I remember leaving that movie, and, you know, that movie focuses on, you know, the horrible fact of what they're doing to the fish, and that we're cleaning out the oceans, that the oceans are polluted, and the environmental impact. And we walked out of that theater, and I looked at him and I went, we're not eating fish anymore, are we? And he went, nope. And I'm like, okay. So then that was it, you know. And this was, you know, we were probably 5 years in at this point when that happened. And so then it was really just cheese and eggs left. And at that point, I was working for the Winnipeg Humane Society, and I got involved with their Farm Animal Welfare Committee. And then I saw some videos on egg production, and that sort of solidified it for me. We gave up eggs, and then we kept cheese, but only socially. We kind of reasoned with ourselves on that, like that it wasn't that harmful, and that we were only doing it when we were out. We didn't purchase it and bring it into our house. So it was random. But it wasn't too many years later when that started feeling uncomfortable for me too. I saw more images online of mother cows being separated from their calves, and that was upsetting. And so when I saw that and I started thinking about it more, we were on vacation actually, and we were eating pizza, and I just kind of looked at the pizza and looked at the cheese, and I felt unhappy, and I felt, you know, kind of disappointed in myself, and I just decided that was it. And then from then on, we gave up. We went completely vegan. So it was a long process. Mm-hmm. I would say it was a process of about 7 years before we actually were full vegans. And then at that point, you know, it was everything. Yeah. Then it became what we wear and all the products that we use as well.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That's a really interesting story.
And it's not the regular story, but it...
No, but I really appreciate you sharing that, because I learned that when I was talking to Chad in my last interview. We talked a lot about that too, because not everyone goes vegan overnight, and it is a process, and we have to just, be kind with ourselves, be kind with others as we go on this journey.
Well, and it's what education you're given. Perhaps if I'd been shown a movie like Dominion or Earthlings right away, I might have made that decision right away. I've always been compassionate. But it was like the information was slowly revealed to me.
Yeah.
And I had to look for it. So it was only through my own investigation and only through finding these pieces of information and then just digesting it and figuring out how that was going to work. Because when we went vegetarian at first, it wasn't like it is now. There wasn't many products out there. Mm-hmm. We kind of weren't sure what to eat anymore. So it really depends on where you're at and what your resources are. And what you've seen and what you've heard and what you feel about that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my sister told me I had to watch Earthlings, and that was like, and that was it. I mean, I did.
And that was it. Overnight.
Yeah. I mean.
Which is amazing.
I think I ate cheese one more time after that, and then I couldn't. And then it was like that, and then it was it. And then it was overnight. But I know that's not... You know, it's different for everyone.
Yes.
And like you said, it's what you're exposed to. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Thanks.
So I just want to talk a little bit about activism now.
Okay.
So do you consider yourself an animal rights activist? And how did you first get involved in activism for animals?
So much like my process with food, I think animal activism was a slow reveal for me. When I look back at, you know, how I was as a kid, I think I was an activist at heart. I was always the kid that was concerned about the dog that was chained in a backyard. Or I remember, one incident where I had a dog, and my grandmother was babysitting, and she wanted my dog to sleep out in the garage. And I refused. I didn't want that to happen, and she wasn't going to budge. And so I slept in the garage with the dog to make a point to keep him warm and healthy, those kinds of things happened, you know, periodically when I was a kid. But I'm a city person, right? So I'm really only my animals around me were only dogs and cats. When I was in my 20s, I lived in Australia. I was married to a professional rodeo cowboy who I met when I was backpacking there, and suddenly I was involved in a life that I really knew nothing about. I was in a full rural environment around cattle ranchers, people who rodeoed for a living. We traveled full time on the rodeo circuit. And so, you know, in the beginning, it was, I suppose it was me not being sure if I know what I'm talking about. Like, I would see things and not be happy about it. But most people, if I mentioned anything about, like, I was concerned about a horse and concerned about whether it had enough water or food or whether someone was hitting an animal, you know, it was always explained to me, oh, that you know, they have a thick hide. They don't feel that. I watched a lot of roping. Obviously, I was on the rodeo circuit. Mm-hmm. My husband was a saddle bronc rider. I had concerns all the time, and I asked a lot of questions. Sometimes I spoke up, and I was laughed at when I spoke up. It was, you know, I was a city girl, and I didn't know what I was talking about, and they thought I was being silly. I was concerned for the calves. And then I started my career as a rodeo photographer, and it, you know, that was an evolution just because that I had no other option for a job while traveling full time with my husband. And I started taking photos, and immediately when I would develop the photos, this was back in the film days, I would look at the pictures of the calf roping, and because I didn't know when to take the photo, I was taking them at the point of impact of the rope going around the calf's neck. And so then I would look at the picture, and the calf, you know, the neck is like a U shape. And, you know, these calves are babies, and they're, you know, off the ground, and they have a terrified look on their face. And, you know, and then they're, you know, they're a big guy comes and jumps on them and, you know, wraps up their feet. And I was really upset by it. And I decided on my own that was it. I wasn't going to take photos of calf roping. I was working for a lot of magazines at the time and submitting stories and photographs. And so I decided that I wouldn't submit any stories or photographs about calf roping or steer roping. And I started making these little mini stands, which caused a lot of trouble for my husband, as the, you know, guys would come to him and say, why is your wife not taking photos of us? And, you know, why isn't she putting us in the magazines? And he's, you know, he said, well, you'll have to talk to her. She doesn't like what you're doing. And he was kind of sympathetic to my reasoning, but it was difficult for him because this was, you know, these were his people. These were all the people he knew. And then I started, you know, paying attention to how contractors treated their animals. So if I saw a contractor treating their animals poorly, well, then I wouldn't promote that contractor's rodeo. So I was doing activism in my own way without really understanding it, but just not morally being able to make those choices, and I just didn't want to help anyone who I felt was hurting animals or who I thought was a bad person. If I saw someone kick a dog, well, that was it, you know. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to help that person anymore. Over the years, that caused a lot of problems, and ultimately I moved away from Australia. I came back to Canada because it impacted my marriage and impacted my business and what I was doing out there. But it was I would say that was the start of my activism. When I came back to Canada, you know, it was through my evolution into vegan eating, and then looking to find a whole new crop of friends that were vegan, and then you know, joining, when I was at the Humane Society, I felt compelled to join the Farm Animal Welfare Committee at the time. So I've always, I'm ready to stand up for animals. It was an evolution as to knowing where that place was and how to go about it, and to overcome my own abilities in terms of being shy or maybe not feeling like I know what I'm talking about or not being assertive enough. But I feel like the activism has always been there at heart. But now I'm in a place where I understand activism and I understand how to use it and how to use my voice. And I have more knowledge now. So now I feel like I'm evolving into an actual activist, I would mm-hmm. say.
I think you're an awesome activist. You do a lot of stuff for the community in Winnipeg. So we'll talk about that in a moment.
Okay.
But first, I want to talk about, because you follow a Whole Foods plant-based diet.
I do.
And so I think for some people, they're not sure of what the difference between that is and veganism. So do you mind talking about?
Yeah, not at all.
What's the difference between those two?
Okay, so when I went vegan, it was a really quick turnaround to when I went from vegan to whole food plant-based. So for me, it was an evolution. Vegan is who I am, and it's how I conduct my life. So veganism, as everyone probably listening to your podcast would know, is that it's a lifestyle. It's not just your diet. It impacts, you know, the clothes you wear and the products you buy, and all of the choices you make. When you're eating a whole food plant-based diet, it's primarily concerned about the diet. So, you know, people can eat a whole food plant-based diet and not be vegan. But from my experience, I find that they really do go together, because a whole food plant-based diet by its nature does not include any animal products. So once you take the violence off your plate, you maybe will be start to aware of how animals are used in your life and more able to make those corrections. But the whole food plant-based diet is exactly what it sounds like. It's based on whole plant-based foods. So it doesn't include any plant-based foods. So no vegan alternative meat, no Beyond Burgers, no, alternative cheese products, no, you know, the packaged sour creams and the things that vegans are buying and enjoying nowadays. Those aren't part of the whole food plant-based diet. It's really just whole plants. You're in your kitchen, you're making meals, you're shopping in the produce aisle. You're not buying your food from boxes and freezer packets. So that's primarily the difference between a whole food plant-based diet and veganism.
Awesome. Thank you for explaining that. And so when did you actually adopt the whole food plant-based? Also, no oil, right? That's part
of
that.
No oil, yeah.
So when did you adopt that?
So that was back in about 2015. So it was shortly after we had decided to give up cheese and become vegan. My husband and I, who've done all of these things together, which has been very helpful. I know a lot mm-hmm. of people don't have that same experience where they might go vegan and their spouse does not. But my husband and I, every step we took was together. I would tell him something I read, or show him a movie or something, and then we would just make a decision to take those things out of our diet together. When we decided that was it, we were giving up cheese, which was the last thing. Then, you know, we were happy for a little while with, you know, some alternative meat products, some alternative cheese products. But then my mom, she wound up in the hospital one day. She had broken her hip. And I, you know, for a couple of years, I had been wondering, you know, I wonder how long my mom's going to be in her house. And, you know, what's the plan for her? And she didn't really want to make those plans. I guess she didn't want to, you know, didn't really want to realize that she was at that stage where she had to think about where she might end up or not being in her house. And so she would always put it off. But suddenly she was in the hospital with a broken hip, and she couldn't go back to her house because her bedroom was on the second floor. And so she moved immediately into my home. When she was in the hospital, they didn't want her to go home because she didn't know until she went into the hospital that she had extremely high blood pressure, and her cholesterol was high, and they were really concerned about her heart health. And looking at my mom in the hospital, you know, seeing her at that time, she looked very frail and not very well. I knew her diet wasn't very good. And I had, you know, talked to her a couple of times about her diet, but not really specifically. When she moved into my house, I felt it was my responsibility to make sure she was healthy. And I knew that food could bring a person back to health. And so it was clear to me from the beginning that I couldn't ask her to stop eating chicken and eggs and dairy and transition onto processed products that are, you know, that I, you know, I didn't see that I saw that as a lateral move that wasn't any healthier for her. Mm-hmm. So I started looking into what would be healthier, and I came across the whole food plant-based diet. And I started reading. First, I came across Dr. Esselstyn. He has a book on how to reverse heart disease. And then I came across the movie Plant Pure Nation, and another movie called Forks Over Knives right at the same time. And it really just explained how a whole food plant-based diet can heal a person. It can prevent most chronic diseases and reverse them as well. And so together, my husband, my mother, and I started down the road of adopting the whole food plant-based diet together. And that, you know, that was how we went about that.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And also, so you're the founder of Plant-Based Living Winnipeg Group.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about that group and, yeah, why you started that?
Okay. So the reason that how I went about it was I saw the movie Plant Pure Nation. So Plant Pure Nation, for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's on YouTube and it's free. And it chronicles the work of T. Colin Campbell, who was a nutrition researcher. And he wrote a book called The China Study, which was based on the most comprehensive nutrition study ever done in human history on the effects of animal-based products in cancer, and cancer versus animal products versus a plant-based diet. So I watched that movie, and at the time, you know, during this year of transition when my mom had moved in and we had gone from vegan to whole food plant-based, I found myself increasingly isolated from the friends I've had my whole life. Most of my friends, you know, all of my friends, none of them were vegan. When we ate cheese and, you know, we were kind of eating some processed foods, it was a little easier just to get along. But I was going through a stage, and a lot of vegans will recognize this, as I started really resenting that they didn't seem to care about what they were eating. Mm-hmm. That, you know, over the years, I always felt like, well, it's not my business what they eat. And I didn't talk to them about their food too much. But I wanted to talk about the food. I was excited about whole food plant-based. And there was all this health information that I couldn't believe that they weren't interested in. But also, on the other hand, all of my friends would call themselves animal lovers. They all had pets, and they all seemed sympathetic to animals. And it's one of the things that we had in common. And I couldn't understand why they wouldn't make that connection. And it became increasingly hard to sit with them at meals and watch them eat animals and just have no consciousness about this at all. And after, you know, spending some time with my friends, I would come home feeling really discouraged and unhappy and somewhat depressed. So there's a book out right now. It's called Vistopia, and it talks mm-hmm. about this. But at the time, I didn't know what that was. And I just knew how I felt. And I didn't really want to spend time with those people anymore. But then I was spending time alone. And I felt that I needed friends. I felt that I needed to find vegan friends, people who were eating the way that I was, so that I could feel more normal, and that they would support me and understand. So I started, first of all, I had joined a couple of vegan groups. I joined a cookbook club and, you know, a couple of online vegan groups, but nobody really wanted to talk about the food. They were all eating vegan foods and they weren't eating animal products, but they didn't want to have discussions about, you know, the health part of food and eating whole food. So when I saw the movie Plant Pure Nation, right at the end of the movie, they say, if you would like to start a plant pure pod in your community. So these pods are, you know, little pockets of community groups that happen all over the world. It's international. And it was basically a call out and saying, if you want to join plant pure communities and start your own community, then it gave you a website to contact. So I immediately filled out the form. I thought, hey, like, this might be it. And mm-hmm. I filled the form out, and they phone you, they give you an interview, and you set up your group. And so I set up a Facebook group, and I went out to a vegan market, and I put a table out, and I put all my books on the table, my cookbooks and my educational books on the table. I had nothing to sell except for just wanting to talk about this lifestyle. And, you know, I met probably about a dozen people at that market who knew what whole food plant-based was and were excited that I had this group. And, you know, this group grew from, so I started it in 2016, and we have nearly 1,000 members now. And we do monthly potlucks, we do restaurant meetups. And I would say that my friend group now is primarily that group. So mm-hmm. I would say within that group, I've made at least two dozen really good friends, which has been amazing for me. And that was really what I was looking for. But I see that has also happened for them. So the people who joined this group, they were having the same experience I was. They were feeling alienated from their family. They were looking for other people who were doing what they were doing. And so they've also found a friend group. So it's a really cool community. And, you know, Plant Pure Communities is all over the world, and they have a support network for you. So there's a website and there's support. I have a regional manager, and there's flyers and movies and things that I can download, and they're just interested in spreading the message. And so it's a really cool thing to be part of.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. That's really awesome.
Thanks.
I mean, you took the initiative and started this group, and I mean, it's really changed a lot of people's lives. I mean, including your own. But like you said,
yeah,
all these people are connected now around, you know, food and celebration and just common interests.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, really celebration of life and food and health. And it's really, yeah, really amazing. So,
and for anyone who's not familiar with Plant Pure and the Plant Pure Nation movie and the whole project, they're really inclusive. Like they're not just about the whole food plant-based lifestyle, but they also support political advocacy and activism as well. So I found that with the group, I've been able to bring in, you know, I have friends in the activist networks too, and they are starting to come into my, you know, they come to the potlucks to check out the food, but they're also welcome there. We also know that, hey, this is the animal activist group, and then they are able to talk about what they're doing to the group, and they recruit people from the whole food plant-based group into their activism group. So it's actually something that I feel brings a lot of people together, because it's very non-judgmental. You don't have to be vegan to join, but it's definitely I always make the point that I am vegan and that I feel that that is the compassionate choice. And we talk about peace and we talk about the environment and we talk about, you know, where we're headed and just the greater good of humanity. And I think it kind of brings everyone together. So it's a really cool thing. But Plant Pure Communities embodies that whole message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's amazing. So maybe, I know we talked about it a little bit, but maybe if you just want to talk a little bit about some more of the health aspects. So like what type of evidence supports the fact that whole foods plant-based is, right, the healthiest diet that you can eat?
Yeah. So there's a growing amount of evidence out there. And for anyone who's interested in the data and looking at the science, they can start to research. There's a man named Nathan Pritikin, Dr. Dean Ornish, and then Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn. Those three men have been successful in taking people who have late stage heart disease, like where their doctors have basically said, you know, go home and there's nothing more we can do for you and you're probably going to die within a few months or the year. All three of those men have been able to put patients on a low-fat, whole food, plant-based diet and successfully reverse their heart disease, stop their heart disease and then reverse it and give those people many more years of life. So it's the only diet that's ever been shown. There's no other diet. There's no keto diet or no low carb diet or any other diet that has been proven to reverse heart disease. So for me, that was huge. The other aspect of it is that, you know, like I said in the beginning, the first study I ever came across was processed meats and bacon, smoked meats, all being carcinogens. Like, and now the World Health Organization has labeled those things as a class one carcinogen. It's in the same category as asbestos and cigarettes. So it, you know, we know for sure that it's a cause of cancer. Mm-hmm. Also, red meat is a class 1A carcinogen. So they're saying it's a probable cause of cancer. The China study actually produced that in evidence as well. And Dr. T. Colin Campbell in his study is in the lab. He was able to turn the cancer growth in mice on and off by administering either 20% or 5% animal protein. And he was using casein, which is the milk protein. And he was able to turn cancer cells on and off by either, you know, giving them that protein or taking it away. And those kinds of studies, you know, to me, you know, there's no arguing it anymore. I know that, you know, there's a lot of confusing information out there and people will say, oh, but there's this study that says saturated fat is fine or that, you know, eggs aren't so bad for you. But you have to look at where those studies come from. Those are those studies come from the industries themselves. So, you know, dairy and eggs and meat, they're trillion-dollar industries, and they hire scientists to do studies, and then they take the information out that they want, and they hide the information that they don't want you to see. So you can't trust those kinds of studies, but the kinds of studies that these whole food plant-based doctors are using as their information base, they are, you know, they're not funded by industry. They don't have a industry bias. They're, you know, pure scientific evidence, and that evidence is mounting. And there's a reason why our Canada Food Guide got changed. It's because we're starting, you know, even people who aren't vegan are starting to realize that eating a lot of meat and a lot of dairy isn't healthy for us. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty obvious. And the other thing is that when you go on a whole food plant-based diet, as with my mom, and that's, you know, to me, that's my evidence. My mom, when she finally did, you know, adopt this whole food plant-based diet and change everything, she went from being where she, my mom hasn't exercised to my knowledge in my whole life. I've never seen her. Now she's 77 and she goes to the gym 4 or 5 times a week. She does weightlifting and aquasize and aerobics. And to me, that shows what this diet does for her in terms of giving her the energy that she needs. And I see now her life, you know, she has many years left. She's off all her medications. When she first moved in with us, she was on medications for her high blood pressure and cholesterol. And now she's off all of those medications because, you know, last time she went to the doctor, they tested her cholesterol. And the doctor actually said she's never seen such low cholesterol numbers in someone her age before. To me, that's my evidence.
That's amazing. So we know that it works.
It works.
Yeah. We know that the evidence is there. So yeah. I mean, you've already mentioned a few places that people can learn more about this. Are there any other like YouTube channels or articles or websites that you would suggest for people to check out?
I would suggest, okay, there's a couple good things to look at. There's a website called nutritionfacts.org, and it's run by a Dr. Michael Greger. And he basically is taking all of the studies that are out there and then disseminating that information into a video, into a transcript. So it's not funded by anyone. It doesn't take any advertising dollars. So it's pure scientific information. And you can search anything on that website and find a video about it. So that's a great place to look for information. Any place on YouTube, there is so many good channels out there. Also, T. Colin Campbell and the eCornell Nutrition Studies Program has a website. So it's nutritionstudies.org, and there's fantastic articles on there, lots of information. You can, on my plant-based Living Winnipeg site, which is plant-based Winnipeg, WPG.com, we actually list a lot of that information. And there's books. When I started off, I really went to the library and I took the book out, How to Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease by Dr. Esselstyn, The China Study by T. Colin Campbell, and How Not to Die by Dr. Michael Greger. And those to me are the three most important books. I went there and I got all my cookbooks from the library at first until I started building up my own collection. So there's so much free information out there. You definitely can just search whole food plant-based doctors or whole food plant-based information and you'll have infinite choices.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing. Yeah, I really want to read The China City. I have not read that.
Yeah. Well, you can actually watch the movie Plant Pure Nation because
The
China Study is not an easy book to read. And it might not be for everyone, but there is a China Study documentary on YouTube, and then there's Plant Pure Nation movie.
I think I have seen the China Study documentary on YouTube, and I watch Forks Over Knives, and I love that.
And Forks
that
Over Knives, and they talk about the China Study
so
in that
good.
Book as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's where I learned about it.
And that's on Netflix, and that's also free if you have Netflix.
Yeah, awesome.
Great sources of information.
Yeah, there's, like you said, there is so much information out there, is just knowing where to look. But your website, do you mind saying your website address
again?
So
it's plant-based Winnipeg. So plantbasedwpg.com.
Awesome. Yeah. So people can check that out.
You can. And I list all the movies, the books. I have links to some videos on there. I have a list. If you go into the For the Animals page, it lists all the animal activist groups in Winnipeg and any vegan events like the Animal March that's coming up or Veg Fest. You can find all of those things there.
All right. So maybe we'll switch gears just a little bit. But still related.
Okay.
We'll talk about Nation Rising. So recently you were involved, or still involved actually,
yes,
with Nation Rising and bringing Nation Rising protest or rally to Winnipeg.
Yes.
So do you mind telling us a little bit about, what is Nation Rising?
Okay, so Nation Rising is a grassroots political advocacy group. It was started only 2 or 3 years ago in Ottawa. And it was so far that's where the main event has taken place. And basically they have a mandate of, they're asking the government to take the billions of dollars that we spend on animal agriculture and redirect that money towards fruit and vegetable local organic production in Canada. So I first saw it a few years ago online. And I, you know, I couldn't be in Ottawa for the first event, but I thought that was pretty cool. And I contacted the organizers and asked if we could put on an event here in support, which they were happy to let us do. And so I had that event actually with Cheryl, and I did the event together. We were the co-organizers. And it was just, we had just a rally for it at the Manitoba Legislature building on the same day as the big march was going on in Ottawa. And now they have actually come back and asked us to start the Nation Rising Manitoba chapter so that we would actually have a year-round organization here. And the main thing that we want to do with Nation Rising is to get people speaking to their elected officials. We sometimes forget, or we don't know how to talk to these people who we've elected to do what we want them to do. And instead, they are influenced by corporations and lobbyists who spend a lot of money to get them to give their industries subsidies. And it doesn't make sense that we are subsidizing animal agriculture when we know how much pollution it causes, how much land waste there is, and how much water wastage is happening with animal agriculture in a world that we are increasingly running out of water. And we are looking into our aquifers, even though Canada, it seems like we have a lot of water. It's, you know, what is left unpolluted, what is usable drinking water. And we're not protecting those resources. And in fact, we're absolutely wasting it with the animal agriculture industry. And we're giving them money to take to build their businesses on land where they pollute the land and pollute the waters around them and pollute the air. And we have to say enough is enough. And what we would like to see is more fruit and vegetable production here in Manitoba, more organic local food available to us. We shouldn't be relying on Mexico and California to bring in all of our produce when we could build greenhouses here instead of slaughterhouses. Mm-hmm. So the message of Nation Rising is actually a simple one. It's based on logic. They're not saying that you have to be vegan to align with their message. It's just that this is common sense. And they're really just trying to get the word out. I don't think the average person actually knows how many billions of dollars go into animal agriculture. So they're educating people on that.
Yeah. It's astronomical.
Huge.
I knew it was a lot, but until like people really started talking about it, I think it's like $3.9 billion the federal government gave to the supply managed industry. So yep. It's dairy, chicken, and eggs.
Yeah. And it's all the
those
time.
Industries. And it's
the kind of grants and subsidies that are given, you know, for example, they're funding, there's a reason why when you go to, the fast food restaurants that, you know, they can sell a burger for a dollar,
Yeah. You
know, and so they're not just funding these industries, they're helping fast food restaurants, and they're further, contributing to the demise of our health as a population.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the flip side of it, we're giving them billions of dollars, but then the money that we're spending to get these people, we're marketing these foods to them. We're these new grants in the past year, especially for the dairy industry, are being used to produce new products and come up with new promotions and get people eating more dairy. And that contributes to more disease, more heart disease, more cancer. So on the other side of it, that's costing us on the healthcare end. So when we're talking about the rising cost of healthcare, it makes sense that we lead people towards a whole food plant-based diet and make it affordable, because that was the biggest criticism when the Canada Food Guide came out. People who were criticizing it were saying, well, it's expensive to eat this way. Well, why is it expensive to buy oranges and it's not expensive to buy a package of steak?
Yeah.
You know, why is the meat cost going down and fruit and vegetable costs going up? So if I want to eat healthier, it's going to cost me more. If I want to eat poorly and probably end up in the hospital with heart disease, I'm going to pay less to do it. So it doesn't make sense.
No, it really doesn't. I went to go buy celery the other day and it was like,
it's crazy.
I don't know, almost $7.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I can't buy it.
Yeah.
And it's like one of my favorite vegetables.
Because celery does take a bit of water to grow it.
Yeah.
But it's also because it's not being grown here.
Exactly.
You know,
and it could be.
I have celery in my front yard right now.
Yeah.
Like, because of the cost of celery, I decided to grow it this year. And I have huge, huge crop of celery coming in. It's delicious. It's the best tasting celery I've ever had. And it we could have it here. We could build greenhouses instead of all the, you have no idea how many slaughterhouses we have in Manitoba. If we could build greenhouses instead of slaughterhouses, like, everybody would benefit.
Yeah.
Not just people who are vegan, but everyone. So it doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
You know, people who eat meat also use celery. So it's crazy that we're making it unaffordable to eat healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this is such an important issue. So, and there's going to be more.
Yeah,
coming from Nation Rising Manitoba, so people can check that out.
Yeah,
so.
It definitely, in the fall, we'll be having a launch of Nation Rising Manitoba. And what we want to do is get people out who want to support the cause. You know, we want to talk to you about how do you write letters to the politicians? How do you talk to them? How do you phone up their office and make a meeting with them? Because you know what? They work for us, and that's their job, is to speak with us. And not enough people know, and maybe they're fearful of going out and speaking to them. But Nation Rising does this excellent thing where they research all of this information, and then they provide it to every single person who wants to talk to their politicians. You actually have the research to back it up. You don't have to go looking for that information. It's all compiled for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they will instruct you and coach you on how to speak to your politicians, how to make the appointment, how to make sure they're listening to you, you know, what to tell them. And so on the local level, we'll be doing that here. And, you know, we'll have some workshops where people can learn how to do those things, you know, maybe a little bit of practice and speaking, and just to empower more people. And so we'll be looking for people to join our committee, but also just to get involved and take this issue up.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, it's really exciting because it's such an important issue for everyone.
It is.
Animal rights activists, you know, people who care about health, people who care about the environment. If you care about all those things,
huge.
If you care about life and
like
living your
water.
Life. Exactly. You want
to
live and
breathe
be able
air.
To breathe air. Then this movement and this issue is important to you. Because it's literally animal agriculture is killing our planet.
It is.
It's killing us. It's killing animals. It's killing everything.
It is.
Everything.
And
it's,
I think,
so destructive.
They have no idea even where that animal agriculture is going. Like, we're the biggest hog producer in Canada, our provinces. We have the most hogs out of anyone in Canada. And we're not. Those aren't for us. Those aren't. That isn't to go to your local grocery store and feed your family. That's going to China.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's ridiculous that, you know, we're using our land and water resources, you know, to provide cheap meat to other countries. So it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, at some point we'll have to do like another podcast just about
Nation Rising.
Maybe in the fall when we are launching stuff and getting things going, and just sharing more information with
make
people
some
about
phone
that
calls to some politicians
live on air. No, just kidding, but why not. All right, well, thanks so much for talking about that and sharing that information, because it is really so important, I think, for
it
everyone
is. And
to
it's
get
exciting
involved.
it's a really cool it's a really cool movement. I think it's just getting started, and people will really pick up on this one.
And honestly, we're in a crisis mode, so we have to address these things, and we have to address them now.
And
from take urgent
angles.
Action.
From whatever part you can contribute, however much you can shift the way things are going, we all have to get involved.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So what advice do you have for people who might want to get involved in activisms, whether it's like with animal rights, environment, health stuff? You know, what is it?
What does it take?
Yeah.
So the one thing that I would say for anyone who wants to get involved in any of this is just make that initial connection, join that group or show up at an event and talk to someone. Because what I found is that the community as a whole, whether you're talking the animal activist group or the whole food plant-based group, is that they're absolutely welcoming to new people. And they're so overwhelming that you will feel, people come to our potlucks and you know, I can see them when they walk in the room and they're a little bit timid, and you know, they're not sure about, you know, they're on their own and they don't know anyone. And by the end of the night, you know, they're talking to everyone. Nobody is left to feel alone. I think that this movement, most of these people have experienced how that feels.
Mm-hmm.
To be an outsider and to have these different viewpoints. And so they're absolutely the most welcoming groups you can possibly find. And they're so glad that you're there. If you go out with Manitoba Animal Save and you do one of their vigils, like, they're really, you know, excited that you're there, and they're welcoming and embrace you and give you support. So there's somewhere for everyone. And, you know, not everyone can be an activist. I know that some people find the realities of factory farming a little bit too hard to face, or maybe they're a bit too sensitive. But that's not, that doesn't mean that you couldn't support those movements. It's just that you need to find where you feel comfortable, and then that will change over time. So the more people you speak to and the more information you have, then, you know, you can get started in activism just by being informed yourself, because then when you're having conversations, I have conversations daily with people, and, you know, people often say things to me that are absolutely untrue about animal agriculture. And it's not easy to have these conversations, and you do have to learn a certain tact. But when you do have the scientific information, if you can approach it from a non-judgmental point of view and just, you know, just give them the information, they may not accept it, but at least you've planted a seed. So, you know, that's activism. But, you know, if you want to start wearing vegan shirts, like, I know a lot of people who just go out and buy shirts that have vegan messages on them, and they prompt a lot of conversation. People will approach you and ask you about your shirt, and they're usually, it's a friendly thing. So you can be an activist just by doing that and inviting conversation with other people. So there's a lot of ways you can become an activist. I would say, like I said, if you go to the Plant-Based Winnipeg site, there's a list of all the active animal activist groups, and you can join one or all of them, and you can check them out and see which one appeals to you.
Awesome.
And then just, make a contact with someone and tell them that you want to be involved, or show up at the one of the many events that go on in the city every week.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Because, there are so many ways
that
you can be an activist, even like sharing a post or,
you
know, like making a new recipe and sharing it with people, or sharing a recipe, like, you know, and having that community to go to with the plant-based potlucks. I think that also just really helps, like you said, build people's confidence and security, and kind of just, you know, it is important to have a community.
It is.
Of people, whether it's around food or activism or whatever. I mean, it's all similar, this lifestyle that we're choosing not to, you know, harm animals.
Yes.
And, but also to take care of ourselves and our health and our fellow humans.
Yeah. I think that's a big part of being a successful activist, is that to not remain isolated.
Mm-hmm.
If you just stay at home, and you can get really upset as to what's happening in the world. And, you know, even when I've heard environmental activists talk about this, and it becomes overwhelming when you really start researching and seeing what's going on and seeing the data, because it's not there in the regular media. And then when you start to uncover it on your own, it feels overwhelming, like, oh my God, we're doomed and no one's doing anything about it. But the best way to feel better about that is to actually do something and get active. It will make you feel better. So, you know, definitely do put yourself out there. And ask people for that support, or tell people that you're looking to meet new people or make new friends in this movement. Because for myself, I definitely did have a period of depression in terms of, you know, how I was feeling about the animals and my friends and, you know, just the world in general. And now I know so many people that are vegan and whole food plant-based and compassionate people that I kind of forget about the rest of the world sometimes, you know, I know that, you know, we're not the largest percentage of the population yet, but I do see it growing. And the more you get around this community, the more you'll see the growth that's happening, because it's not always evident if you're just looking at regular mainstream media that veganism is growing in leaps and bounds. And it's not just the people who are going vegan, it's people who are just eating less animal products, becoming more aware. People do care about climate change. Like, this shift is happening, and I feel like it's this movement that it's just, there's been a slow burn, but now I think it's just about to really take off and become way more mainstream. So it's a good time to get out there and get involved.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like I like that analogy. Slow burn, but now it's like, see the flames starting to shoot up a little higher. Yeah. So it is really exciting.
Like, because, I feel like they can't stop it now.
Yeah, because, I mean, I went vegan 12 years ago, and I didn't really know anyone. I mean, luckily my sister was vegan, but we didn't have a community. None of our friends were vegan. None of our family was vegan.
Yeah.
It's super isolating. And, like, now it's just... Yeah, I mean, there's so many people. And like what you said, I think that's such an important point, is just go join and do something, because isolation is very hard. And I mean, yeah, no one likes going. Trust me, it's not like I want to spend my time at a slaughterhouse.
Yes.
But being with my community of people and knowing that we're doing something and we're doing it together and building those relationships, I feel empowered and positive, even though I'm at one of the worst places on earth.
Yes.
Literally, slaughterhouses are hell on earth.
But you're
right?
not there alone, you know?
Exactly. And we're doing something. We're trying to raise awareness. We're trying to have education. So whatever it is, I mean, like you said, not everyone can go to a slaughterhouse. Not everyone can, you know, everyone's at different journeys. And that's okay, right? It's finding your community.
Yeah. And just
support.
Because you can't do it today doesn't mean you can't do it tomorrow. So just keep an open mind. And when you do go to these protests, you don't have to talk. You can just hold a sign. You can just stand by and support the people who are holding the sign. So, you know, inch your way in, you know,
even
show
just
up,
sharing
just
the
stop
event,
by
you know?
A protest and say hello and bring the protesters a drink or something, and you'll feel that you've done something. You'll feel that you've been involved, and then maybe next time you'll stand there with them. Mm-hmm. Maybe next time you'll make a sign, like, or, you know, maybe you'll just start like Cheryl said, you know, sharing photos of your plant-based food in your newsfeed. I find that that's one of the easiest ways to, you know, it may not seem like activism, but it has an impact. And you know, I saw a meme recently that makes me laugh when I think about it. And it says, you know, in the meme, the character says, you know, I didn't get anywhere posting, you know, the animal agriculture videos. It doesn't say it like that exactly. But now I got to share food photos to make people pay attention. And that's sometimes what it is. Like, they'll scroll past those images that make them uncomfortable, but without thinking about it being vegan, they'll see a picture of your beautiful meal that you created that's animal free, and they'll just go, oh wow, look at that, it looks delicious. And that's just such a softer way of approaching people and not making them feel like, you know, not everybody is willing or able to go vegan overnight, or, you know, they're not even going to consider that if that's what you're suggesting. But if you're just suggesting to try some food that happens to not have animal products in, that can just be a foot in the door. And if they have one or two good meals and they don't have any animal products in it, where they didn't think that that was possible before to enjoy food without animal products, then you've opened a door, you've planted a seed. So you know, whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. So we're getting to the end of the interview, but I just want to ask you one last question. So what is it that gives you hope and that inspires you to keep doing what you're doing, even in the face of, you know, climate catastrophe, animal abuse on a mass scale, you know, all these issues that we're facing right now in the world?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, just what I've been saying is what gives me hope, is that I can see it's growing. You know, when I started my plant-based group, I really had no idea how many people would join it. And now, you know, with 1,000 members, it feels like, okay, you know, this is catching on. People are interested. It is growing. The normalization of the term plant-based has been interesting. On one hand, I have some issues with it, because it's being used as a marketing term, and some people and some companies are using it to indicate that if a product can be, you know, 80% animal free, then they call it plant based. And but on a general scale, people are comfortable using that term. They know what it is, and then it's just another step to go vegan. Yeah. So I really feel like that normalization is happening. I see vegan options everywhere now, even though it's often might just be a Beyond Burger, but it's there. Almost every restaurant feels that they have to serve a vegan option. I remember when we started going vegetarian and vegan, like, that was that wasn't the case. There wasn't, we could go to a restaurant and have absolutely nothing to eat except for maybe a side of fries.
Fries and salad, the classic vegan meal from back in the day.
And it sucked, right?
Yeah, it did
and now
suck.
You can go to most restaurants, and even if you have to call ahead and ask them to make something special for you, you can actually get vegan meals, and people understand what it is. It's common. There's vegan milks for your coffee at all the restaurants. And so, you know, this is like the tipping point now. So now that it's there, you know, you can see how many people who aren't vegan, maybe not even vegetarian, but they don't buy dairy milk anymore. They buy a nut-based milk. You can see in the supermarket, then just that section of milk growing is huge. Like they need their own aisles now and their own sections. And the milk industry is scared. The dairy industry is scared. They're, you know, they're fighting it tooth and nail. And but the prediction is that, you know, soon dairy will be a thing of the past. People will start to realize, even, you know, people who are meat eaters realize that, you know, dairy is mucus forming, and it's, you know, it's silly. It's really crazy to be drinking the milk of another mammal after the period of weaning, you know, we're the only species that does that. We, you know,
it's not necessary for human health.
It's not for human health.
It's harmful, in fact.
We've been tricked. And that's sometimes where I start with people is, you know, just being sympathetic to, we've been lied to. You know, I drank a lot of milk as a child because I thought it was healthy.
Oh, yeah, I did too, right?
And
up
made
until
me strong.
I was like a adolescent, teenager.
And what that did was it gave me acne and it made me overweight. And I didn't know why I had acne and why I was overweight. And I blamed that on my eating habits. And really, it was due to my dairy consumption. So people are waking up to that. Even if they're not ready to go vegan or vegetarian, they, you know, are dumping dairy. And so, you know, as these industries take these hits and as they're predicted to fall, I think that, you know, a world without factory farming is in our sights now. And with the threat of climate change and the environment, it's a shame that it had to come to this. Like, it's a shame that things had to get so bad. But I feel like we're at that point now. We either have to embrace the change and make huge sweeping change as society. And I think some people will start to come to realize that. Or, you know, we're going to face some terrible consequences for our actions. So I think that what gives me hope is that I think that we will, as human beings, wake up and realize that we need to save ourselves, and we'll animal agriculture will be no more, hopefully.
Well, that gives me hope just hearing you talk about that, so thank you for sharing that, because that is so important to talk about these things, of the positive aspects of all the stuff that we're doing, not just what we're trying to solve or change.
It gets back to that message in Nascent Rising, is that they're not saying, you know, they're with the farmer. They're saying, okay, so take the dairy farmer and get them making nut milks instead, or use their farm for solar power, or transition to an industry that's built in the future. You know, we also know that the oil and gas industry has a limited time to be, you know, where they are now. And, you know, they're fighting to keep their presence in the world. But we don't want to rely on that. We know that dirty fossil fuels are not in our future. And so solar panels are being built all over the world with increasing speed, and electric vehicles. And this is all progress. And I think that if we can keep that in our thoughts, is that the evolution to a plant-based diet is an evolution. It's real progress to imagine a world where, you know, we didn't have heart disease wasn't our number one killer, and cancer started to go on the decline instead of on the increase. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be a wonderful world where, you know, we were all healthier and happier and less violent, more peaceful. And all of that goes back to veganism. So it's, you know, veganism impacts everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's, a great way to kind of end the show. It's all connected in veganism. So just everyone out there,
just get on board.
Get on board and go on your vegan journey. All right. So before we end the show, do you want to just let people know again about, like, your website, Facebook group? Just how can people find out about how to get in touch with you and learn more about plant-based living Winnipeg?
Okay, so we are most active on Facebook right now. That's where I started my group. So it's Plant-Based Living Winnipeg if you search in the groups. I do have a page for Plant-Based Living Winnipeg, but it is in the group that we're the most active and that you'll meet other people and converse with them if you're on Facebook. If you're not on Facebook, we do have an Instagram page, and we are periodically posting our events there. They often don't get posted anywhere but Facebook only because they're our events have been so popular, especially our potlucks, is that when I announce a potluck within 3 or 4 hours, they're full. And we're increasingly looking for larger spaces, but even still, they fill up really quickly. But those are, the potlucks are great to come to. And even if we're full and you get a hold of me and tell me to put you on the waiting list, that definitely do that because people do drop off, obviously. And on the website, which is plantbasedwpg.com, all of those things are listed. So there's a link to the Facebook group. There's a link to the Instagram page. All the resources are there. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can send me an email. Get in touch with me through any of those ways. And I answer anybody who messages me with questions. And we do, more than the potlucks. If you're uncomfortable with attending a potluck and cooking, which some people, that makes them nervous, we do have restaurant meetups. We have Plant Pure certified restaurants in the city. So far, we have two of them, which is Circle Kitchen Winnipeg and Vinny's Hot Foods. Both provide whole food plant-based meals with no oil. So they're part of our Plant Pure certification group, and we do restaurant meetups there. Sometimes we get together in the park, or I encourage the plant-based members to also attend other activist group events. Like there's a potluck coming up at Kismet Creek Farm for Manitoba Animal Save, and I know that a lot of members of my group will attend that as well. So there's a lot of ways to get a hold of us, meet up with us at events. You can always approach me. My picture's on the website, so you can easily find me and come talk to me. We have Veg Fest coming up in September 21st, and we'll have a table there, and you can come and talk to me at that table. So
awesome. Yeah,
lots of ways to find
me. Thank you so much. And Michelle is obviously a very friendly, outgoing person. So yeah, it's always nice to know a face.
Yes.
And have someone to kind of go to and talk to. So yeah. I know you've supported a lot of people. So yeah, it's really excellent, all the work that you're doing. I just want to say, thank you so much.
Thanks.
And thank you for being here today and taking the time to talk to me about all the work that you're doing and all, your beliefs and all the information that you shared with everyone and about Nation Rising. It's just really, really important information. So I'm really happy. Yeah. When this episode will be up on my Mixcloud so people can check that out.
Yeah.
So I just want to say thank you again.
Well, thanks for having me here.
And yeah, it was awesome. Yeah. We'll definitely do another one about Nation Rising maybe in the fall.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Anyways. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in today and my interview with Michelle Tree on Vegan Activist Radio. Thanks, everyone, for your support. Until next time.